Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you haven't heard, it's a good idea to fit probiotics into your daily routine. Fortunately, Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls make that so easy. These adorable little pearls couldn't be easier to take, and they support both digestive and vaginal health, all because of the probiotics. There are actually 1 billion active cultures protecting against occasional bloating, constipation, and digestive discomfort, all in one tiny little pearl. To learn more about Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls and how they can fit into your routine, visit naturesway.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products. Because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I am Ben.
Ben, super excited about today's topic, and I bet you are too.
Yeah, no, we've done similar stuff before, Scott. Even before we partnered up with our world-famous super producer, Noel Brown, we had done notable cars and movies, right?
Sure.
We had done a listener mail edition just about movie cars.
Yes.
And we've done some stuff about police chases, too.
Yeah, actual chases.
Actual, like, real-life chases.
Real-life chases.
O.J. Simpson to, I think we mentioned a couple times in our lives that we've seen police chases.
Sure. Yep. But we have never covered the two combined. We've never done movie car chase scenes. And I don't know how that's evaded us for the last, 7 years or something like that?
Yeah, especially considering how fun it was to just sit at our desk, at our office, and watch car chases.
Oh, yeah. And I want to point something out, though. Remember when we were doing all the sponsorships and we had, some of them were Audible, of course, but we also did some Netflix stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And some of the Netflix picks that we had, for as part of that advertisement, I would search out some movies that I remember from the past, that had some amazing chase scenes, and we would talk about them. We'd talk about the cars involved. We'd talk about the background vehicles and all that. And so I feel like we've talked about some of this already, but not entirely, not all of them were available on Netflix, when we had that sponsorship. So these are some additional ones that we never got to talk about.
Right. And listeners, we're hoping that you will check this out along with us and tell us at the end if there's anything that you think other listeners need to know about. Because I'll tell you right now, Scott, we're not going to get to all of the great car chases in films,
No, exactly. And, some people are going to argue with the ones that we do pick because they won't like them for whatever
sure.
reason, whether it's the cars involved, the surrounding story of it, if they don't like the film itself.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of dispute back and forth. Which is the best one? I don't know if I can even name the best one. I've been watching these all week. Actually, about a week and a half, I've been watching car chase films.
Yeah. People have said that there are clear, kings of each category, but they have so many different categories. Like, is this the first recorded car chase ever? Is this the first modern car chase in a film, which we will talk about? Is this the best one involving, fictional vehicles? Is this the best one with real life precision driving?
Sure. Yeah. And did the actors do the driving themselves, or was it stunt drivers? And how much of this was real? Because we go through this. This is incredible. I've been looking at a lot of the information, the background information on all these chase scenes. And, as far as like permits being pulled and all that kind of stuff. And some of these didn't have the necessary permits. So a lot of the action that's involved, if there's a collision with a light pole, it's a real collision with a light pole. And occasionally some innocent bystanders get involved and, things are worked out in the end. But, we'll try to note some of those as we go through. Ben, I wanted to, before we even really jump into our first movie pick or whatever,
uh-huh.
Because we're just going to kind of ping pong back and forth with some thoughts. I just wanted to say that, you know, watching all these clips, you know, I noticed that in the 1970s and the early 1980s, I would guess, there was this trend towards almost like demolition derby style pileups of police cars in a lot of films. I mean, it's more than just the ones that we're going to mention today, because there's a few.
But it became like a mark of authenticity.
I guess so. Yeah. And it's always police cars that are involved because they're chasing the suspect, whoever it is. Right. And I mean, I haven't seen anything like that recently. I've seen a lot of destruction in films, but not quite the same way it was back in the late 70s or early 1980s when you would have, you know, 50 police cars that end up in an intersection just, you know, laying on top of each other and rolling over and sliding over the entire pile and just incredible scenes, just amazing stuff like that. So it's been since then that we've really haven't had these, I guess, these demolition derby style chase scenes.
Right.
Also, with and I wanted to point this out because I was thinking about this on the way in this morning. I was driving in heavy traffic, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, while we were watching some of these on our desktops, you know, and, you know, film clips or whatever, along, you know, some of the suggested videos, along with the video or the film clips that come up, are the actual chase scenes. Like, and I mean, I guess actual car chases that come up. You know, so like, you know, something happens out in L.A. and they right away are on the car chase scene with the helicopters overhead and, you know, the reporters that kind of do the play-by-play, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think that rarely is a real chase scene quite as dramatic as a movie chase scene. And that has a lot to do with, of course, you know, being able to manipulate it afterwards, you know, with the right camera angles and footage, et cetera. So I think that maybe only the people involved in the chase itself, like a real chase, would have any kind of the adrenaline or the feeling that this is like a high-speed, you know, exciting chase, I suppose, can call it that. I know it's dangerous, but it just doesn't have that same effect when you see a helicopter shot from, you know, 1,000 feet up above, you know, on a freeway. The car is going 120 miles an hour, but it doesn't really look all that exciting. It's not like watching a bus jump in, you know, an open section of a freeway or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's why, of course, that in a filmed car chase or in a fictional car chase, so much of the camera work points right back at the people driving so you can communicate their excitement. I also noticed a lot of, I want to go back to something you said earlier. I also noticed a lot of themes, not just the demolition derby, which you mentioned at the top there, which is totally a real thing, folks. And I think if you look back on some of your favorite chases of yesteryear, you will notice this as well. But there are other themes that happen in modern car chases. What we have found is that more often than not, there are, you know, like 1 to 5 maybe people pursuing or other vehicles pursuing the hero's vehicle, two of which typically end up falling off the chase somehow early on. And you can tell when you're watching the chase, you can tell who's going to be the main antagonist car, right?
Sure.
Or in some cases, you know, a Jeep or a Land Rover or maybe even, I don't know, a tank. And then you can also tell the people who are going to slide off early. You can also tell about the focus of a film based entirely on the condition of the protagonist car toward the end of the chase. Like James Bond, God bless the man, cannot save a car worth his life. I mean, he will walk away from any accident, but that guy goes through like 5 cars a week.
Aston Martin's completely destroyed every time.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see some of his less spectacular driving, not where he's being chased, but where he's just, you know, trying to parallel park and ends up killing 3 people.
it seems like that would be the case, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. But then we also have other movies, for instance, like The Transporter, which we can talk about a little bit more in depth, where the movie is also about the car. You know, it's about the guy and the car. So
sure, it's a main character.
Right. So you see his precision driving. Yeah, cars do get messed up in the Transporter franchise. But in general, one of his big things is that he takes good care of his car.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So it does differ in that way.
It does differ. And you can see different tropes or themes in car chases. What I would like to end on ultimately at the end of this show is a question for our listeners, but I don't want to spoil it yet. So listen carefully. There's going to be something like a quiz at the end. Scott, what's your first pick?
All right, Ben, I'll jump right in with here's a popular one, Bullet. And Ben, this is probably like one of, you know, the big screen's all-time well-known chase scenes. I think a lot of people point to Bullet as maybe being one of the best chase scenes.
And the first modern car chase
scene. And I'm going to hold off on saying that it's my favorite or anything like that. I mean, it is, it's right up there, but I don't know. After watching so many of these, I don't know if I can really qualify this as my favorite, but the chase sequences sometimes at up to 110 miles per hour in San Francisco, which is insane. I mean, they really were driving 110 miles an hour. I think the director had called for speeds to be somewhere between 75 and 80, and they pushed it up to 110 at some points in here. But it's a full 10-minute sequence. That was
almost 11 minutes.
Almost 11 minutes, okay. That was filmed basically with handheld cameras and you know, chases up and down these really narrow, steep streets. Have you ever driven in San Francisco?
He starts at Fisherman's Wharf, right?
Yeah.
And he goes through the... I'm going to say it. I know we're a family show, so pardon my French, but these are just hellish streets.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you, I just asked if you ever driven there, but when you're driving, I mean, when you could be sitting at a light and you can't see the street above you. You know, if you're sitting parked uphill, you can't see the street. You know, it's above the front of the car, or below the front of the car, rather. Mm-hmm. And the other way is if you're headed downhill, you can't, I mean, the street fills your entire windshield. It's bizarre. It's really strange driving. I've long maintained the idea that I could move to San Francisco and I could open a shop that just specialized in clutches and brakes and make a fortune.
Oh, you could. Yeah.
I think it would. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think that's a money-making venture there.
I mean, it's got to eat a clutch.
Yeah, it certainly does. So these streets are intensely steep.
Yeah. And also curve a lot.
Oh, yeah. Lots of curves, of course. Yeah. And, okay, so there's two cars. It's big V8 muscle cars, right? I mean, we're talking about a 1968 four-speed Ford Mustang GT fastback that's driven by Bullet.
Uh-huh.
And also he's in pursuit of a black 1968 four-speed Dodge Charger 440RT. Mm-hmm. And it's just a fantastic scene. And I think the thing that maybe most impresses me about this whole scene is that it's almost all natural sound, or maybe edited in sound, but there's no music score.
Right. It's way more grounded and realistic because of that. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the route?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, it starts in Fisherman's Wharf area, but, if you notice, Bullet first sees the, hitman following him while he's driving west on what today is called Cesar Chavez. So he's at the corner of Columbus and Chestnut, when this actually begins, and follow along with me here. I don't want to overcomplicate it, but they go around Midtown, High, Laguna. You see some shots in the background of some famous landmarks to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. They're around Filbert and University Street, and the chase itself ends in the Guadalupe Canyon Parkway in Brisbane, California. But here's the thing, Scott.
Probiotics aren't a trend anymore. They're a mainstay in the health and wellness aisle of your favorite store. And Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls are the easiest way to introduce a probiotic into your routine. I mean, they're just what they sound like. Adorable little pearls that couldn't be easier to take. But they still pack that probiotic punch. Each tiny pearl has 1 billion active cultures and protect against occasional bloating, constipation, and digestive discomfort. And they actually support both digestive and vaginal health, so that's a win-win. And according to my little fact sheet here, they're designed with a triple layer coating that protects each pearl from stomach acid, so they can make it all the way to your small intestine where they're needed most. You probably didn't think we'd be talking about the small intestine today, did you? Well, digestive health is kind of important. If you know, you know. To learn more about Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls and how they can fit into your routine, visit naturesway.com.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without painful fingersticks. So you can always know which way your glucose is headed. An arrow shows you where you're heading, up, down, or steady. It can also alert you before you go too low or when you're going too high. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM available, you can make better diabetes decisions about food, medication, and activity in the moment. And all those little decisions can lead to big results. Results you can see, like more time in range and lower A1C. With Dexcom G7, you can manage your diabetes with confidence. Get started with the number 1 recommended CGM brand by doctors and patients at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If we follow that route, and if the chasing is in real time and it takes 10 minutes and 53 seconds or whatever, then the kicker is that it is physically impossible for a car to take that route in that amount of time, even if they're going 110 miles an hour.
That's some creative editing. Even at 110.
Even at 110, man.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And there's lots of times when it's much slower. And of course there's some crashes, some missed turns, reverse burnouts and things like that that have to happen. And you know what? I'd like to dispel, since I just said reverse burnouts, I think there was one that was left in that was kind of unintentional. You know, the director didn't intend that to happen. McQueen does a reverse burnout in his Mustang, and they leave it in the film. And just one quick thing here is that there's a common rumor out there that Steve McQueen did all of his own driving in that whole scene. It turns out not a lot of it was really him. It was only about... I think a lot of people say that it was only about 10% of the driving was actually done by McQueen during that scene. So here's what happened. Early on in the filming, you know, at the beginning of the chase scene, because it took a while to film the chase scene itself, right? There was a collision. I think Steve McQueen actually drove into a parked vehicle, you know, when he was trying to do these stunts.
Oh.
And his wife became very upset with this, right? She didn't want him to be in danger doing this thing because it was going to be exponentially more dangerous as the shooting progressed, you know, mm-hmm. as they were doing some of the jumping scenes and things like the sliding and round turns and things mm-hmm. at high, high speeds. So she begged Peter Yates, who was the director, to use stunt drivers after that point. And McQueen, of course, wanted to do the driving, but they put Bud Eakins in the seat. And Bud Eakins was a motorcycle rider from, there's a lot to Bud Eakins' story, but we'll just leave it at that. He's the founder of the Baja 1000, I believe.
Right, yeah.
And, anyway, so Bud Eakins was sitting in the driver's seat of the Mustang at one point when McQueen approached, and he was super upset with this because he thought he was going to be doing all the driving. Of course, he was really, you know, jacked about doing all that, right? So he was kind of upset with not being able to do it. But the other thing is that there was supposed to be a music score that was supposed to accompany the scene, but no music was added at the end because they felt that the engine sound, the tires, et cetera, was just too good to cover up once they realized what they had when they got into the editing suite.
Uh-huh. They also, you said that McQueen himself is an accomplished driver.
Yes, right? He is.
And he is driving in those close-up scenes.
Yes.
That's the 10%.
Yeah, that's about the 10%. And they mentioned that when he was driving, he tried to stay as close to the edge of the window as he could so that people could actually see him behind the wheel of the Mustang. So, you know, it's is that vain? I don't know. I mean, I think he really wanted them to know that he was there. And one last thing on this before we move on, because there's a lot more films to cover.
Right.
One thing that's noticeably missing from this whole film, or from this scene, I guess, the Golden Gate Bridge.
Ah,
and why
yes.
wouldn't they use the Golden Gate Bridge? I mean, it's so iconic right there in San Francisco, right?
It turns out that Uncle Sam shut them down, or City Hall.
Well, yeah, I mean, access was denied, I guess, to film anywhere on or near the bridge, right? So, all these permits come into play later in some of these other films, but they had permits to work in San Francisco. And they did with it what they could, and I think they did a fantastic job. It was a great scene.
Yeah, just to follow up on the history of the cars as we move on. They used those two Mustangs. One of the two Mustangs was scrapped after they filmed because it was just so beat up. They were worried about liability. Mm-hmm. The other one was sold to an employee at Warner Brothers.
Hmm.
Car changed hands a couple times, and then in 1977, McQueen tried to buy it back. unsuccessfully.
Unsuccessfully.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're not sure where this last remaining Mustang from Bullitt is, but it's rumored to be in the hands of a private owner somewhere in the Ohio River Valley.
Oh, I like stories like that.
I know. Yeah.
I always do.
So let us know if you yourself live in the Ohio River Valley and you see somebody who seems to be secretly tinkering on a Mustang.
Or taking it out for a weekend drive when they think no one's watching.
But leaning close to the window so you can see that it's them driving. What's next?
All right. Next, you know what? I've got a pair here that I'd like to mention at the same time. The Italian Job. First one from 1969 and then the remake in 2003. And I just watched this morning just to kind of get, back up to speed on what was going on with this, I guess, right? And it's a heist film, of course.
Yeah.
Which I love, by the way. That's one of my favorite types of films to watch. And the thing is about the original chasing, it's kind of funny too. It's not just, you know, it's not just all action and quick cuts and everything. It's a little bit funny because the idea that these tiny little cars could go anywhere they wanted to. I mean, they ended up, going up and down stairs. They ended up in a covered mall area, sliding on, the tiled floors. And I think there was even somebody mopping, so it was even more slick. So they're doing a lot of sliding around inside this, this covered mall area. Also, they were in subway stations. They ended up on rooftops, which is really pretty amazing. One rooftop that they ended up on famously was the Fiat factory in Turin. Now, the headquarters, they have a test track on top of the building there, and they did a full lap of that during the film. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. What's interesting here, and I'm glad you brought up this point, Scott, is that we're going to have a couple of other reboots on our list. Mm-hmm. And I love that the one thing they always keep is the car chase.
Yeah. And you know what? I didn't even say it up front because I thought everybody just knows this. I just assumed everybody knows. They use minis for this. They used a red, red, white, and blue mini, to be patriotic, I guess, for Britain, right? And the funny thing is, these BMC cars, British Motor Corporation, BMC actually refused to donate cars for the film because they didn't know if it was going to be successful or not or how they would be portrayed or, whatever. And Fiat decided that they wanted to donate cars. And they were going to use, they said, well, it's being shot in Italy and we'd love to help you out here. How about you use Fiat 500s? For, all these chasings for the main focus cars. And they said, well, this is really a British film. I think we're going to stick with the minis, even though they're not going to donate the cars. So they went with the mini instead. And, the rest is history because there were a lot of Fiats in the background. If you notice, most of the other background vehicles right, in that film are Fiats. And that's for good reason because Fiat was so excited to be part of this film and BMC wasn't necessarily, but they ended up with the starring role.
You know, everybody has their own wellness routine, their own approach to a healthy lifestyle. A lot of the most successful ones include herbs like ginger root, ashwagandha, and so many others. Nature's Way has been sourcing herbs like those for over 50 years. They understand that nature is the ultimate problem solver, so they're dedicated to providing plant-powered formulas to help people live healthier lives. Their herbs can support your health in so many ways. For instance, ginger root and slippery elm bark have both been used for centuries all over the world. Ginger root has traditionally been used to soothe occasional digestive upset and slippery elm bark to soothe the GI tract. St. John's wort, holy basil, and ashwagandha can provide mood and stress support, which is something we can all use in our modern life. I mean, these herbs come from all over the world, but Nature's Way knows where the best ones grow. They test for potency in their state-of-the-art lab, and their scientists are experts in all things herbs. What's on the label is what's in your bottle, and what's in your bottle are the best herbs around. To learn more, visit naturesway.com.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without painful finger sticks. So you can always know which way your glucose is headed. An arrow shows you where you're heading, up, down, or steady. It could also alert you before you go too low or when you're going too high. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM available, you can make better diabetes decisions about food, medication, and activity in the moment. And all those little decisions can lead to big results. Results you can see, like more time in range and lower A1C. With Dexcom G7, you can manage your diabetes with confidence. Get started with the number one recommended CGM brand by doctors and patients at Dexcom.com.
That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's strange, but also one thing that I really enjoy about this is that it shows how much more creative directors can be when they have unusual cars, you know?
And unusual circumstances.
And unusual circumstances.
Because here's one unusual circumstance, Ben. this is something that you might not know. And I'll tell you where I'm getting some of these little trivia facts. I went to IMDb, the Internet Movie Database.
Yes, sir.
And just searched the name of the film and trivia, and it will come up with 25 or 30 points. You know, a lot of them, of course, we're talking about films where car chases are central focuses, you know, of that film. You know, there's amazing car chase scenes.
Yeah.
So a lot of the points there in that trivia will relate to that car chase scene. And I find it really, really interesting to go through there. But one of the interesting points there was that the Italian mafia showed up while they were in town shooting this in Turin. And they actually shut down the roads. So the authorities had nothing to do with this. The Italian mafia shut down the roads and all those traffic scenes that you see, because there's incredible congestion in the city.
Right.
And all those were actually like really happening. That was like a real traffic jam, and the people in it were just real people, not actors, and then not extras or anything like that. So they're super frustrated. I mean, it's absolute gridlock. People are out of their cars. They're frustrated, and all of that emotion, everything is real in that film.
Wow, that's great.
I know, it's neat, isn't it? And all that stuff, you know, we're going to find a lot of things like that where, you know, permits weren't pulled or, you know, the authorities wouldn't cooperate, you know, things like, or they would cooperate and there was some great benefits from that.
Or
too.
The directors took crazy risks, which, if you're okay with it, brings us to another one. The French Connection, 1971,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
William Friedkin, here's the thing he did. He had, the driver was, Bill Hickman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Hickman was a veteran stunt driver. And he helped compose the choreography of this chase scene, which is amazing if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So here's the weird thing. In this film, in the chase, the character played by Gene Hackman takes over a Pontiac Le Mans and chases an elevated train.
Yes, this is so cool. It's a car. Well, there's a chase on the train. There's a foot chase on the train.
Yep.
And then there's a car chasing the train from below.
Yes, and the weird thing here is that William Friedkin, the director, made Bill Hickman drive 90 miles per hour for 26 blocks of Brooklyn without stopping, and he had the director and the cameraman in the back seat. And the director said later, he said, "I would never do anything like that again. It's a good scene, but I was foolish."
It's a fantastic scene.
It is.
So, and you know what? This is not the first time that we'll see. Well, actually, this is the first time in this podcast that we'll see a chase happening under an elevated train. And I've been thinking about why they use this. I mean, it's really dramatic when you see it because it gives you such a sensation of speed from the driver point of view and from, you know, just anybody watching outside because of those enormous iron poles that hold the train up, you know, the elevated train platform up.
Right.
And so you get a real sensation of speed. It's not like you're out on an open road. You could be going 120 and it doesn't really seem that way. You really feel like you're going 120 or even faster. And you said they were driving 90 through Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The thing about this that makes it even more incredible is that there were no proper permits pulled for this film.
No.
So they had no authority to be doing this. They, if the police saw them, they're in big trouble. That's the way it works, right? Probably the car impounded, you know, the haul off to jail, whatever.
Yeah.
And because of that, there was actually one, at least one real crash that happened during this filming. And the real crash, it happens, and I just watched it again this morning, about 3 minutes into the crash scene, if you search it, you know, on YouTube or wherever, about 3 minutes into the scene, there's a crash at an intersection. I can give you the names, but it doesn't really matter. But the crash was real and unplanned. The guy, the white car that that Gene Hackman supposedly, Popeye Doyle, crashes into with his, he's driving, what is he driving? He's driving a brown Pontiac Le Mans, I think, a 1971. Yeah. And he smashes into the front end of this. It's kind of like a glancing blow, but man, there's heavy damage to both cars. That was absolutely real. The guy in the white car had just left his house a few blocks prior.
Wow.
Out for, you know, I don't know if he's going to work or where he's going, but completely, you know, unknowing that, you know, this chasing is happening. And, you know, they ran a red light or whatever. It smashed into him. Heavy damage to both cars. But they left it in the film, and as happens with a lot of these films.
Right.
And I know that the, you know, later they said that, you know, everybody was fine. No one really got, you know, a couple bumps and bruises and stuff and, you know, shaken up. But the studios did pay for the damages to the guy's car. So it wasn't like, you know, completely a wash, you know, for this guy. He didn't just totally ruin his life or anything like that. But and now he's starring in a film.
Yeah.
Or a film chase scene anyways.
But the studio better pay for it. And it's pretty lucky.
Well, sure. And they had some help from off-duty New York City police officers, which also is pretty interesting, right? Because the city won't give them permits. But they went kind of the backdoor route, and they said, well, let's get somebody who knows the city, and they can maybe, I guess, manage traffic for us, I guess. Maybe that's the best way to say it, manage traffic, because they can shut it down as the car passes at 90 and then let everybody go, and, you know, there's no harm.
Right. It's like a rolling temporary shutdown.
I guess so. Yeah, and there's so many unplanned little things that happen in these films. Like, but one thing that was planned, and they're careful to point this out, is that the there's a scene where he narrowly misses a woman who's pushing a baby carriage.
Yeah.
And that was very well choreographed and very well planned out. That wasn't by accident. So, you know.
Everyone be at ease.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think a lot of people are a bit outraged when they hear that, you know, this is mostly a real chase, a real chase scene, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see that scene, because it is a narrow miss, and it was definitely well scripted.
So I'm going to go to this next one just because it has the same director. French Connection was in 71. In 1985, he went on to try to top his car chase with a little film called To Live and Die in L.A.
Oh, okay. So this is one I did not investigate.
Oh, okay. Well, this one's interesting. So I'm just going to talk about the car chase itself.
Okay.
So there's this guy, a Secret Service agent. His name's William Peterson. He's driving a Chevy Impala the wrong way down a freeway trying to dodge gunmen.
Of course he was.
So the director reversed the traffic flow to get this desired effect of this Impala going the wrong way. And, you know, that's one of the most exciting and frightening things to see in a filmed car chase. Or in real life, which I've seen a couple times, is a car driving the wrong way on the interstate.
You've seen that in real life?
I've seen it in real life.
You know, it's funny. Since I've moved here to Atlanta, I have heard about this on the news, and often it ends horribly.
Yeah.
Somebody enters the freeway on the off-ramp, and it's a disaster. I mean, it happens at night. It happens, you know, when there's limited visibility, something like that.
Right.
Or drugs or alcohol involved, whatever.
Sure.
It always ends poorly for both drivers because someone's going to contact that car.
Yeah. Luckily, the two times I had seen it over my time living here, it was late at night.
Yeah.
Fairly empty on the roadways or very light traffic. And I didn't see an accident, but I freaked out and I got off the interstate later because, you know, the next exit, I've decided this is no longer the place for me.
Is there a moment where you thought, am I going the right way?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Just for a second. I mean, if it's pretty open and you're not, you know, you don't see a lot of cars going the same direction as you, do you think just for one moment, like, oh no, you quickly check which is your left and which is your right. Right?
Of course. Yeah. It's that same kind of, perspective check that happens if you are maybe at a red light in the center lane and the light turns green and you don't see the light, but the cars to your left and right are moving at the same time. And you wonder if you're going backwards.
Oh yeah. 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 I've seen that. Or like they're slightly rolling or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely messes with your mind.
But speaking of messing with the mind, he did another, same director did another film called Jade, which is a thriller, but not for kids. Okay, it's a little racy. And this car chase features a Chinese New Year parade. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, happy Lunar New Year, Scott. I guess it did just recently occur.
Oh, thank you. Likewise, Ben.
Oh, thank you. But that third car chase wasn't the most successful, leading many people to vote for The French Connection as this director's best car chase of all time. Hmm.
All right. You know, I want to take just 1 minute to mention just a couple that I think we talked about these maybe during our Netflix selections. And I just want to mention them for maybe 30 seconds and be done with them.
Absolutely.
But how could we not mention a movie called The Last Chase? And do you remember what The Last Chase was? And I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you remember what that was or not?
The Last Chase.
The Last Chase. If you don't, that's okay, because it was pretty obscure.
Wait. Was this science fiction?
It is, yes.
Okay, what happened?
Okay.
Here's why
I have to give this a mention. This is with Lee Majors, who the guy who played, you know, the $6 million man.
Yeah.
And Burgess Meredith, who is, you know, later in life, he was the trainer for boxing star. Well, is that right? Boxing star? Boxing champion? Rocky?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an awkward way to say that. But during all the Rocky films, you know, he's the old guy. He's Mickey, right? Mm-hmm. Or Mick.
Mick.
And so Lee Majors is a retired race car driver. And he's got this, like, pieces of a Porsche 917 in his garage, like a Can-Am spider car of his old car that's still left over, but it's in pieces. And there's some kind of crisis going on where there's no oil left, or there's, you know, it's being very, very restricted, I think. And maybe it's no oil. And Burgess Meredith is like, hired by the government to kind of chase him down as he tries to make it across the country in this race car, in this Porsche race car, with his son. He's trying to make it all the way to California because California is the free country at this point. You know, that's that's where the last remnants of society.
Of democracy.
Yeah, exactly right. Of democracy. That's a better way to say it. So it's a Porsche 917 Can-Am Spider being chased by a jet flown by Burgess Meredith, and he's shooting stuff at him, like he's shooting him with, you know, the straight guns and everything, but he's also shooting him with, I think it was lasers.
Yeah, it was a laser cannon.
Yeah, cool as that. It's a corny film, and it is, but how often are you going to get to see a 917 Can-Am Spider on roads, like on regular, like backcountry roads? It's amazing. It's really cool to see.
I mean, it takes the fall of civilization.
Yeah. And then there's another one real quickly. It's a Ron Howard film called Eat My Dust. And he's driving a super stalker.
Yeah.
He stole it, you know, to impress some girl. And I remember this one. The whole movie, they're chasing him in this, like, 700-horsepower Camaro with lots of police cars. And there were a bunch of Ron Howard films, like, just after his Happy Days run that he starred in that were, like, a lot of chase scenes and demolition-type accidents.
Because he's a car guy, right?
He really is, yeah, definitely. I mean, right up through his, what, I don't know if it's his latest movie, but the one he directed called Rush.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a car guy. Interesting. I don't know, just a few interesting ones from our past.
Oh, wait. You know what, Scott? I hate to be a bummer, but I just realized something.
What?
We're going to have to make this a two-parter.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that, because we're getting kind of long here, and I've got a stack of stuff in front of me, and there are a few in here that I like to spend a little bit more time on.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same on my end. So let's go ahead and head out. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for part two of our podcast. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, carstuffshow.com, and of course, write directly to our email address. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.